Welcome back to another episode of A Positive View of Rural, and today we are talking again with Joe Borgstrom, who is the Director of Downtown and Community Services Division with the Michigan State Housing Development Authority, or otherwise known as MISHDA. Joe, thank you very much for coming back for a second topic.
Thanks, Becky. I appreciate being back.
Today I wanted to talk to you about placemaking because you were one of the first people I talked to that was aware of placemaking and working with it, but you were also one of the people who was most understood the idea of placemaking being something more comprehensive. So now that placemaking is the hip and cool thing, and everybody's talking about it, how can we get beyond what's trendy? What is the real meat to the idea of placemaking?
So we had the opportunity last week to talk about Main Street, and one of the reasons that I'm involved in placemaking is because of Main Street, because I think Main Street is one of those areas where placemaking is actually happening kind of in action. So placemaking, the best way to show examples of placemaking is Main Street as an example. But beyond that, you see a lot about, yarn bombing and, people doing parking spaces where they, turn the parking space into a mini park. I mean, there's a lot of tactical kind of placemaking things that you see people do, and that's kind of that trendy, hip kind of a thing. But there's really a bigger thing around placemaking. And what placemaking is really about, and especially for us here in Michigan, which I know is just like everywhere else, but, we talk about it in being kind of this magic triangle. And the triangle is that businesses want to have talent. Talent wants to have place. Place needs to have businesses. And so the three of them are very dependent upon one another. And so, we're very much striving to make sure that we're creating quality places that talent wants to be because we want to attract the businesses. And we want to make sure that we've got businesses and talent as well as quality places in order to make Michigan very competitive. But we've started talking about this, and we've got a website, which is myplace.org, M-I, because we're in Michigan. So miplace.org, and that's our website where we have everything about everything that we're doing on placemaking as a state.
So talent is a really kind of an interesting topic because this gets a little thorny. You live in the community, you've lived here for a while, and suddenly people come up with the topic of, well, you really need to improve this place to attract new talent without as much in the trendy discussion, it seems like. We don't hear as much about the fact that this is also about developing your talent from within and enabling people to use their talents within the community in a way where they become appreciated, as opposed to just being about, hey, we need to attract some hip young people to come to our community. It's also about the people who are already in your community.
Absolutely. The retention of talent, I think, is the number one issue that we deal with. We just recently, in Michigan, turned the tide where we were constantly losing people as a state. So for us, it is a very real and relevant conversation about losing talent, and we're trying to retain it. And the attraction part, I think, is part of that. But the way I view it, and I view it all as attraction, because we're constantly competing, even to keep our own young people as an example, or even our boomers who are retiring and then no longer now tied to that job that kept them in our community for 20 or 30 years. So to me, the attraction is includes that retention piece as part of that, because we've got the two largest generations in human history, which, by the way, the boomers are no longer the largest generation. It's now the millennials. But the millennials and their parents, the boomers, we've got those two largest groups that now are very mobile. They are much more mobile than they've ever been. And so now we've got to make sure that we've got communities who can compete to, one, keep the people that we have, but two, also to attract.
So let's talk about the comprehensiveness of placemaking, because I think the first conversation you and I had about placemaking was you telling me how every part of government within Michigan that you guys could get your hands on, you were trying to make placemaking be a part of everything that was being done. So, like, if they're given money for, like, a water grant, you wanted to get placemaking involved in that.
Yeah, absolutely. We've actually, under this governor, who's just started his second term here about a month ago, he, in his first term, created what's called the Intergovernmental Collaborative Committee, or the ICC group. And this ICC group has several subcommittees. We've got actually one around agriculture and rural development, which really deals with more kind of forestry and mining types of issues. But we also created this one around placemaking. So it's every state department that has any touch to the kind of the physical environment of a quality place. So ourselves here at the Housing Authority, we're part of it. The Economic Development Corporation here in Michigan is part of it. The Department of Environmental Quality, Department of Natural Resources, our Department of Transportation, all of these groups, we get together on a monthly basis and we talk about some of these issues, and we talk about potential projects, as an example, that they could touch multiple state departments. And it sounds kind of odd that the big idea is that state departments talk to one another, but I think if you talk to any state employee, I think in any state in the country, to say, do you actively talk to your counterparts in other state departments? And the answer generally is no. And so that this was really kind of, I hate to say revolutionary, but this idea that we get together on a monthly basis and talk about, all right, what's our scoring criteria on this stuff? You know, what are the factors that we see? And what we've seen happen over the last couple of years is that we've seen our friends over at the Economic Development Corporation, we've seen our friends over at the Department of Transportation, you know, our Main Street program, as an example, has a definition of downtown. Both of these NAs have now adopted that same definition. So you don't have separate departments coming up with these definitions that nowhere does it appear in law anywhere about what downtown looks like, but they're now using we're all using one definition because we get together and we talk about these things.
It does sound revolutionary, and it shouldn't, but it does. And this is perhaps one of the most encouraging little trends. Anytime I hear about either a community, a town government, a county government, a regional association, I know of some regional groups. I remember specifically like Norfolk County in Ontario. They get everybody that's involved in business, licensing, anything to do with a new business coming in, they meet monthly to help those people through the process. So everybody from the building inspector to the permitting to the planning to the everybody gets together and they work through the new businesses together across departmental lines. So that's at the county level. I know some regional people that do that within the workforce area here in northwest Oklahoma. And then occasionally you hear about somebody even up at the state government level getting everybody together around the topic, the one topic of how do we make our towns better places. And I think that it is one of the coolest things you can do. If you're looking for something that would really make a difference in your community, it's get different people together out of different agencies. And if you can't do anything else, go have coffee. Bring your calendar and talk about what's going on. If you can't agree on anything else, you can at least talk about the events that are going to happen in your community.
I would say that was
revolutionary.
And I would say outside of that, you know, kind of having a formalized agenda, one of the things that's really been a benefit out of that is getting to know the other people. So you're absolutely right. Even if it's just a cup of coffee to get together and discuss, it's being able to pick up the phone and know who to call when you've got a question on something. So we've had that numerous times where there's been issues with our Department of Transportation that our local communities call. And in years past, we were kind of at a loss to tell them who to contact. Now we know exactly who to contact. And we tell them Joe told you to call them, and so that they know that there's been this contact. It's somebody that we work with. And so there's a much higher level of customer interaction and customer service than what's ever happened before.
I love it. It's amazing. It's simple, and it doesn't cost any extra to actually do this. So if you need a project, everybody, there's your project for the day.
Yeah.
Start getting folks together. Let's talk about one other subject that you and I had a really interesting conversation on a long time ago, which was, and you really forced my thinking on this, which is not every town is going to get help.
Right.
And we had this discussion because I remember you talking about, you know, limited funds, you can only help so many. And I'm like, but what about, I mean, people in every community deserve a quality place to live. But they may not be going to get one.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, is it really my fault if my community leaders are all fighting each other and not getting along? Do I deserve to be punished by your agency for living in the wrong town?
The short answer is yes. The short answer is yes, because you elect those people. But at the end of the day, you know, one of the things that we talk about, and you know, we've kind of come to grips with as a state agency, and we, you know, we're pretty open and upfront about this, is that, you know, there are certain areas of density that we need to make sure that we address. Obviously, people know Detroit, and you know, people know Flint and Saginaw, and some of these larger cities that have had problems over the last 15, 20 years. But one of the things that we've acknowledged in that process is that they need to have development of capacity. And we see the same need in rural areas. And so we try our best to develop capacity. It's one of the things we do, I think, very well with Main Street and what we do now with the neighborhood program called My Neighborhood. But the idea is that before you put money into a place, you've got to know, as a grant administrator, as a recovering grant administrator, you know, you've got to know that whomever you're going to give money to is actually going to do something with it. And so it's really important that, you know, if we come up with these ideas of we got to be able to serve the most money, or excuse me, the most people, the most effective ways possible, which is that getting that biggest bang for the buck, that it's going to happen in communities who've got their act together, because they're the ones who are going to do something. Because the biggest waste of government money, in my personal opinion, is when money is set aside for communities who do nothing with it. So it doesn't matter the politics of the local municipality at all if they get the work done. And because at the end of the day, that's what you need to have happen. And one of the things that we love about Main Street, as an example, and a lot of the placemaking initiatives, is that it brings those people together, and it turns out when they have that communication process, things get done. So we see a very strong correlation between communities who are Main Street communities, or communities who have good communication at that local level, and communities who are able to execute. Because, again, they can talk, they can get together, and if they can execute, then they get funds. And so there's this process that it happens in that way. Now, you know, I think the biggest and the hardest conversation you and I have had in the past is that, what do you do with those communities who are only a couple of hundred people? And, you know, our answer to that thus far has been, you know what, if there's a group that's willing to come together to help themselves, then we're going to help them to the best of the ability that we can. But at some point, if they get to a point where they can't sustain, you know, whether it's, you know, an organization or whatever that is, then at some point we just need to focus our attention to where those people are. And so that's oftentimes one of the more difficult conversations we have to have.
Yeah. So is there hope for a community? There's two questions here. Is there hope for a community where people are fighting? Have you ever seen a community turn around and get their act together after they have a long history of fighting with each other?
Yeah, we have, actually. And again, I hate to the last show, we talked about Boyne City, and Boyne City had this happen for a while. And, you know, when we go into a community, we talk about Main Street, we talk about placemaking. You know, I've said this for years. You've got the 20-20-60. You've got 20% who are 100% for whatever you're going to do. You've got the 20% who are, at you know, the citizens against virtually everything, the cave people who exist. The battle is for the 60%. And if you can get a good number of that 60% on your side, then you've got a chance to make differences. What we saw in Boyne City when we first came in there 11 years ago with the Main Street program was you had a small group of citizens who were really dedicated to wanting to change the community, and then you had a kind of a group that was on their DDA board who were all really well-intentioned, but they'd been on the DDA board for a very long time, and you know there was some bad blood amongst you know the community with those people who were in those in downtown development board positions. And when we came in and said, you know what, listen, this is a problem, and we you know talked to them pretty bluntly about it. And so the response was from those downtown development board members was, listen, we don't want to be the problem. You know, we, as much as anybody else, we want to see the community succeed. Sometimes we disagree on how to get there. But if we're the problem, then why don't we just graciously step down? And we actually had an entire downtown development board step down in Boyne City 11 years ago. And there was a team that was made up of myself and several members of the community where we sat down and actually people applied. You know, to be board members, and so we kind of helped reconstitute the board in that case. So there is hope for those, and Boyne City is a great Main Street, as I'll show you anywhere in the country, being able to turn themselves around and get stuff done from being a pretty contentious group that they were 12 years ago.
Okay, that's a great example. So here's the second question. Is there hope for a community of 300 people? Have you seen a community of 300 people that, even if it didn't grow, still managed to maintain some prosperity?
The honest answer is no. And I hate to be that blunt. I hate to be that straightforward. That's not to say it can't be done. I have not seen it. I think you got to get to a point where you get a critical mass. You know, again, that depends on you know density in relation to other you know areas. You know, what's the bigger town in the area?
It, so that really does, because a town of 300 people that's near a larger metropolitan area has a much better shot than a town of 300 people that is completely isolated. You know, if it's 8 people per square mile, like it is here in my county, you know, being the town of 300 is a really hard row to hoe. But it
right.
can be done. I mean, Freedom, Oklahoma is up the road from me, and they're about 300 people, and they have managed to maintain a reasonably prosperous community and maintain a lot of services and even manage to reopen a convenience store within the community. So I at least know of one example that's in the 300 people mark in a county where the population density is 8 people per square mile. So I like to think there is hope for small communities, but it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
It really is a lot of work, and I think the challenge, too, is, you know, as the young people grow up, you know, they were more connected than we've ever been, and that's a great thing for wanting to be able to attract businesses, you know, for people to be able to have home-based businesses. That's fantastic. The problem what happens with younger people, though, is that they see what they're, you know, what they think they're missing out on. And, you know, a lot of times they'll go chase that, and sometimes they'll come back and realize it wasn't what they, you know, it wasn't what they were used to, and what not what they're comfortable with. But more times than not, they tend to stay away once they, you know, once they experience that. So that's where I think the biggest challenge is how do you retain those kids? And I've seen some really cool examples. And there's a community in southwest Missouri, and I apologize because I'm completely blanking on the name, that they're a relatively small town. I want to say it was 600 or 700 people. And as their kids graduated high school, they presented each of the kids with a mailbox. And the mailbox was to signify that they'll always have somewhere to bring that mailbox. And that was going to be, they were always going to be able to be home. And that mailbox was that signal to them that they will always be welcome, that no matter where they go, that they encourage them to go off to college, they encourage them to go see the world, but their town will always be home to them. And I've always thought that was one of the coolest things I've seen a small community do, was to give their kids mailboxes to say, you know what, this mailbox will always have a place here in our town.
I think that is terrific, and I know that project has spread, and a number of communities do it now. And I think it's even more powerful when you back it up with the entire involvement of young people in the community. The more involved young people are in actually running the community, if they are actually able to be part of the leadership of helping festivals and events happen, if they're actually involved in decisions that affect the future of the community, if they actually get asked what they want, if they get a chance to participate and show off their art and their talents, then those kids are going to be part of the community. And they're going to feel a much better connection, and they're going to see that mailbox as something as a tangible symbol of the connection they have to the community. If you ignore the kids up till graduation and then hand them a mailbox, not as effective.
And, you know, inclusion is a really important point. A really important point, regardless of the size of the community, that, you know, if your community is experiencing dwindling numbers of people participating, then maybe part of the problem is you. I mean, and I don't mean for people to quit.
Yeah.
I mean for people to be open and to be able to say, you know what, maybe the way we always did it isn't so relevant anymore. Maybe we should think about other ideas. And being able to let go of some things and let other people take over, I think is really hard for people to do, but I think it's really critical for having a very inclusive community that's open to having people, you know, stay there and grow.
It is, and that also involves an openness to new ways of doing things, because, you know, when we had a discussion like this, Marcy Pinner from Kansas Sampler Foundation was moderating a discussion, and in the same discussion, you know, the young people are saying, we want to volunteer, we want to be part of what you're doing, but we can't sit on your traditional board. And then the next question is from this lady that is clearly part of the traditional board saying, we can't get people to participate in our traditional board. And I'm going, I think I see the problem here. There's a major disconnect. You can't continue to have the same traditional structure and expect that new people who have grown up in a completely different way of doing things are going to want to sit on your board that meets monthly for 3 hours. It's just going to be different now. So
that's a national trend. Every service club that I'm aware of, whether it's Lions or Rotarians or Kiwanians, you name it, every single service club is seeing dwindling numbers because they're having a hard time cracking that demographic.
Yeah, because things get done differently now. So it is an important part of your community to let go of the old way of doing it and start embracing some new ways to get things done. And Joe, we have run through another 15 minutes. So I think that this is the time when I have to say thank you very much for taking time out of an incredibly busy schedule and talking with us today about placemaking today and talking with us last week about Main Street and some other great issues. I really appreciate your insights. Where can folks find you and find your placemaking and Main Street and other cool initiatives of the Michigan State Housing Development Authority?
Certainly. You can go to, we've got the My Place website, which again is miplace.org. Our Michigan Main Street website is michiganmainstreetcenter.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Joe Borgstrom, JoeBorgstrom.
All right. Thank you very much again, and I look forward to seeing you again at a conference or an event sometime here pretty soon.
Same here, Becky. Thank you so much.